You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
It is Tuesday on Cleveland Browns Daily. Jim Donovan in for Nathan Segura. Matt Wilhelm at his normal post.
Yes.
And ready to go here today as we go into our final hour of the show. We've been talking about the upcoming Indianapolis Combine, the NFL Combine down in Indianapolis, and Marcus Mariota and possibly the Browns being interested in him, that he right now is working with Kevin O'Connell, who could be soon the Browns quarterback coach, and that's very interesting. We've talked about the plausibility of the Browns maybe, you know, being so interested in him that they would have to make an aggressive move.
They would.
To go up.
What do you think that would be to get to if six is the number?
See, I'm not good at this, the packaging thing. I know there's a formula.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't there a book that you assign points to? What would the pick be, and then you have to go
add up that many points?
I don't know. Do they have to give up 12, 19, and then something else?
I would think so.
I think the team needs...
I think we need enough
more.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. If they don't do that and they still go for a quarterback, at that point, when do you go? Do you go, I mean, what's... It's not as deep. A lot of people think as
think,
it was.
You know,
last
I think
year.
Brent Hundley from UCLA is the next one, but he's got a second to third round grade, so he may be someone that you add, you know, from a competition standpoint in the third round.
All right, what about the kid at Baylor?
Bryce Petty. We had Andrew Gribble, our senior writer here, was in, and he was down at the Senior Bowl and said that none of the quarterbacks there at the Senior Bowl stood out, and that Bryce Petty just struggled taking the ball under center and staying in the pocket and not playing, similarly to Marcus Mariota within the NFL offense as opposed to his system there at Baylor.
All right, let me throw this kid out to you because I watched him a number of times at Oregon State, that kid Mannion.
Yes.
Yeah, now played for a really inventive offensive guy, former head coach of the Chargers,
yes.
Right? Mike Riley.
Yes.
Who has now left there and gone to Nebraska. But now, you know, when these kids come into the NFL, if they've played in some form of a pro system, like Andrew Luck did at Stanford.
Brady Quinn.
Yeah, Brady
at Notre
Quinn.
Dame.
Yeah, right. You know, it seems to put them a couple of steps ahead. Now, this guy's big.
Yep.
He had a great junior year. He had kind of a down senior year.
Similar to Hundley. Similar to
yeah,
Matt
Hundley
Barkley.
Have,
they
right,
came
yeah,
back and they had
right.
a subpar year. Yeah, it hurts them. But it, in some cases, I would say there's probably a round discount for them playing – in a pro-style offense as opposed to a spread offense, you know, they gain about a round yeah. worth of value.
So you would think maybe we see those first two go off the board in the first round.
Yes,
probably
top
ten.
Up
at the top, yeah. And then after that, there could be a void then, huh?
Yes,
yeah.
Very much so. Rounds of void.
All right. Jason Gibbs is producing the show and also now the new host. Well, he's not the new host. Are you the new host of After Further Review, Jason?
No. It's a continuous thing for me.
They give me
my 10 minutes of fame, and that's about it.
Let me just, before we go into After Further Review, the town is still buzzing over the Tony Grossi appearance yesterday on Cleveland Browns Daily. Precedent setting. You guys are both too young to remember a very, very icy running back of the Dallas Cowboys, Dwayne Thomas, who would not speak at all to the media and then finally spoke to Tom Brookshire in the when the Cowboys won the Super Bowl, and the world was shocked. Similar, that was the feeling yesterday.
It was.
At 2:10 in the afternoon, Jason.
Yeah, Riz was still talking about it this morning.
Was he really?
Yes, on the show.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. It was a great moment.
It was a landmark moment.
Yeah, doubting there will be another one. But that might be it. Okay, let's go.
All right, guys, here we go.
After further review.
Question number one today, guys. Obviously, quarterback is our main topic. But outside of quarterback, what should the number one priority be for the Browns in free agency in the draft this offseason?
Oh, okay, free agency in the draft.
Yes,
go ahead.
Free agency in the draft. I'm going to say wide receiver is a higher priority. And the reason why, my second close behind that is defensive line, which is what we asked Gerard, and I know that you said yesterday, Jim. And a lot of the reason why is because I think we had a huge amount of depth this year. Armani Bryant, Desmond Bryant, yeah. John Hughes, Phil Taylor, those are all very good players that we're going to have back to 100% this year that can fill a role. I think another young body in that room will be great. But first, whoever becomes the quarterback here in Cleveland needs those weapons.
Yeah, I think they definitely need a receiver. And, you know, Jason, didn't we love Armani Bryant when he was in there?
We were big fans.
Big fan. Anytime he got in the game, Matt,
he's a sack.
He immediately is in the backfield. And you know what? He plays the some people think he's one-dimensional, and I think he can play a lot. I mean, I think he can play the run. I don't think he runs by the running play.
No, and I think in Pettine's scheme, because he uses so many fronts,
right,
he'll be used strategically when he gets healthy.
Okay, but definitely, Jason, a wide receiver.
Yeah, I would put after that, I know we talked defensive line, but I think you've got to address that offensive line as well. Clearly, there is not enough depth on that line, and we saw what happened when we got a couple guys dinged up last year.
Well, you know what was frightening, guys, was in preseason when the Browns would have to be very, very careful about divvying up the playing time between Manziel and Hoyer, okay, because someone – would typically play behind the second offensive line.
And it got scary.
It got scary. I think it really did. So I think you're right. And once we saw the offensive line get dinged, with the worst being Alex Mack going down, I mean, that was just devastating
to
them. Go ahead, Jason.
After further review.
Question number two today, guys. Will Roger Goodell be the commissioner of the NFL when the 2015 season begins?
I'm going to say yes, because I think that even though he's been in constant Lee under fire all season and thus far off season, I think that Roger Goodell has verbally said multiple occasions that he doesn't see himself going anywhere soon. And as we know, he continually and the owners continue to make more and more money. And as long as that continues to happen, I think that Roger Goodell is in good standing with the owners, and the owners then therefore have no reason for Roger Goodell to no longer be the commissioner.
If Rachel Nichols has her way, Jason, now from CNN, the answer would be no. He would not be the commissioner of the NFL. But I think he might have weathered the big storm, the Ray Rice, the domestic violence situation. But now, you know, I think where he thought he was in the clear and he had, you know, clear sailing and out in front of him, this Deflategate
yes.
still is out there. And as much as we're all concentrating on our gate, Textgate, I mean, I think the rest of the NFL world is more concerned with what will be the ruling on this Deflate thing, because there's obviously this cozy relationship with the Kraft family and Robert Kraft, and people are wondering if the evidence points that the Patriots pulled some hanky-panky, you got to come down on them. And some may feel that he was late to the party and should have come down on them before the Super Bowl.
You're right, and I think just to tag on is I think what we're finding out about Roger Goodell is a lot of these collectively bargained agreements have holes in them, you know, and or the process of game day has holes in it. So for something like that to happen to what everybody feels is such a, you know, an ironclad right. system, which is the NFL, there have been multiple occasions where things have fallen through the cracks.
The other thing, Jason, that keeps him in the office is exactly what Matt said. He makes money and they never lose in court.
No,
with him. They never lose a decision in court with him.
That's true.
Yeah.
After further review.
Question number three today, guys. A lot of banter coming out now that we're in the official offseason of the NFL as to whether or not there should be an NFL D-League. What do you guys think? Should there be a developmental league for some of these guys? You know, maybe in the offseason, maybe it goes into this, maybe it's while the season's going. I've seen a number of different models. I know John Clayton was talking about it on ESPN and wrote a big column about it, and wanted to get your guys' thoughts.
I think that, you know, if in fact the NFL created a D-League, I think every other football league would go away, because the NFL is the spot to be. I think there'd be no more arena. There's already very little money in arena. There's, you know, little money up in Canada, and especially Canadian teams can't come down and can only pluck so many skilled players. So where can you go to hone and fine-tune your skills? So I think it would be flush with plenty of talent and the cash, create that pipeline to the NFL. But what I would like to see is not necessarily create a new league, because then I think, as we just said, Roger Goodell is still figuring out problems with our own league, with Textgate and, of course, the Ray Rice situation. You have to create a whole new set of rules and things of that sort to abide by. But what I would like to see is maybe the NFL gets involved in the other existing leagues and adds value by throwing money or opportunities for players who'd like to transition into the NFL, give them a better platform by truly creating a better process for them to play in some of the other leagues, Canada, Arena, and so on and so forth.
Well, I always admired those guys that when you would read their bio, that they had a cup of coffee in NFL Europe.
Yes.
You know, they played over in Scotland or the Rhine Fire.
Yes.
Or, you know, San Bertigliano.
Frankfurt, yeah.
San Bertigliano coached over in Germany. So I always enjoyed reading those stories, you know, about those guys that did that. And those guys have great stories to tell about living over there and participating.
They do.
I would, if it's at the expense of these other leagues, though, I would say no. You know, I would say no.
Yeah.
I mean, if I think the Arena League has kind of found its way.
Yeah,
and
especially the Gladiators.
Yeah, and
it
has its niche. And the Canadian Football League has a long history. If that got decimated by another league, I would say no. No.
After further review.
Final question today, guys. Saw an interesting article on NFL.com about this. Which team came out faring better after that big blockbuster 2012 trade? With Washington and St. Louis, where Washington ended up getting RG3. And the reason why I say that is the article took the side of Washington made out better because they have at least gone to the playoffs since that trade. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I'm gonna go the opposite, and I'm gonna say that I believe that the Rams made out better. It's
Who do they have because of the trade? I don't even know. I mean, I know they got a ton of picks.
I think they used a lot of them on the defense.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's
Jeff Fisher's there.
Exactly. So. But not to name names, I think that the Rams have bolstered their defense and have acquired some offensive weapons in some of those picks or most recently in the draft. And the reason why I go St. Louis, because I think St. Louis, with a healthy Sam Bradford for two of those 3 years, would have probably made the playoffs or won a heck of a lot of football games, even in a very competitive NFC West. So I think the Rams, from this point forward, have found defensive players that will start and in most cases play a significant portion of their career in St. Louis. And that gives you the backbone to build a winning organization where Washington has been up for 1 year but has been significantly down the last two.
And it seems to have a quarterback, though, that though he got them there, you know, to the playoffs in his rookie year, he's never been the same player since.
He has not.
Physically, and whatever is going on, you know, is he coachable? I mean, is he coachable?
Or is he
one of those guys that fall into that category of being a coach killer? You know, there are guys that are coach killers. Jay Cutler is always considered a coach killer.
Yes, he is.
You know, and there are others.
It's tough. It's tough. And I think what he needs to do is, and most recently he's had his, you know, his feud with a fan on Twitter. Those types of actions, similar to my distaste for what Johnny Manziel doing, those things should not happen to the leader, to the guy that you basically live and die with, which is the quarterback. You never see Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, you know, even on Twitter or in some type of feud, getting DUIs or partying. They're walking the straight and narrow, and that's why their legacy is being created at the quarterback position.
So I'll side with you on this one, Matt, because I would guess that if St. Louis was playing in big games, we would hear people say, and remember now, this guy right here that just made that great play, he's a product of the RG3 deal when the Rams got all those picks from Washington.
Sure.
So that they could draft RG3. And remember, we were right, Jason. We were in the running for that.
We were right there. It came down to
We didn't make the phone call, right?
Yeah, we thought our offer was good enough. And when St. Louis came back and said, you need to improve your offer, Mike Holmgren said, nope, that's our offer. We're confident you'll take it.
Yeah, and you know, Jason, on the backside of that, I think then the criticism that Mike Holmgren took after that made him flinchy in the draft, and then he bolted up to make sure they went and got Richardson and then picked Whedon.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, and I think it was, you know, he was concerned about all the criticism he took about not pulling the trigger on the deal with the Rams to get RG3.
Sure. And even one other vote is I'm not so sure that RG3 is even going to be in Washington this year. You know, having that letter come out to their season ticket holders and his name not being listed as a part of their, you know, their marquee names that they're building around. So his future may in fact be done in Washington, which would sway it significantly in the Rams' direction.
So guys, these are the six players the Rams got as a result of that trade. They got cornerback Janoris Jenkins.
Pretty good player.
Defensive tackle Michael Brockers.
Very good player.
Running back Zach Stacy.
He's been hurt, I think, hasn't he?
Yep. Wide receiver Stedman Bailey. Offensive tackle Greg Robinson, and linebacker Alec Ogletree.
Well, I mean, you know,
not overwhelming.
Yeah, but not overwhelming.
But again, your point: if Bradford plays,
yes,
but he hasn't played.
No, you make everybody better.
You make everybody better. Yeah, I, You know what? I don't think it's a wash. I would give the advantage to St. Louis.
Sure, as would I.
Yeah.
I'd rather have six players as opposed to one.
Right.
All right.
All right, guys.
Thank you, Jason.
What's our next move here?
Break time.
Break time here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Driven by Liberty Ford. We'll take a timeout. We'll be back.